G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. This is episode 223, brought to you by our Patreon members community. Without the support of our patrons, you simply would not be hearing this podcast each and every week, and you would not be seeing the Fasting Highway Facebook group, as we simply wouldn't have time to run it. So thank you to all our patrons that have been joining the Patreon community. And look, it's been fantastic, and I can't urge people enough to give it some consideration. We hold two Zoom accountability meetings each month in both the Northern and Southern Hemisphere. On top of that, we hold a separate Zoom meeting for those that are having problems with breaking free from sugar and support that. But also in the Patreon community, each and every week, there's bonus content, there's bonus discussion topics, there's audio series on all things IF to help you with your intermittent fasting journey and give you that extra layer of accountability to really get stuck in and get on the path to wellness. And I think joining the Patreon community has been a huge success for a lot of people. And I strongly urge you to have a look at that link there in the show notes. Go and have a look at what it's all about. You can find that at www.patreon.com/thefastinghighway. Okay, folks, let's get on with today's podcast. Absolutely delighted to welcome back Rachel Awad. Rachel lives in Cairo in Egypt with her husband, and she's an educator at a local university there. And Rachel has been on the podcast previously, way back in episode 6 in the early days of the podcast, and also in episode 152. And Rachel is a very inspiring member of the fasting community and has vast experience in a number of protocols, and we're going to talk about some of them today, as well as catch up with Rachel and see where she is currently. Okay, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce the wonderful and inspiring Rachel Awad. Oh, g'day, Rachel, and welcome back to the Fasting Highway. It's been a while.
It's been a while, and it's lovely to see you again, Graham, and to speak with you. Thanks for having me back.
Lovely to speak to you all the way there from Cairo in Egypt and an exotic location, and you're the only person we've ever spoken to from Egypt, so there you go. And for those that don't know Rachel, you can go back to episode 6 of this podcast now. We're up to 225 as this podcast is, and that's episode 6. And Rachel also came back on episode 152 to give us an update. So what we might do, Rachel, is just get a quick update for the folks out there that don't know you, just where you're coming from with your intermittent fasting and what you've been doing over the last couple of years.
Sure. First, let me say that Egypt is a lot less exotic when you live here all the time. It's just another busy city, you know, daily life. But there is actually a growing fasting community here. I have quite a few friends and colleagues here who have discovered IF, so it's not quite as foreign. Anyway, so yes, thanks so much for having me back. So I came to intermittent fasting first in 2014 with Michael Mosley's 5-2, which I'm sure you're aware of, and that's sort of essentially 2 days of fasting, 7 days, 5 days of, you know, eat whatever. And those two fasting days, there was no focus on clean fasting, and you could have essentially during those days 500 to 800 calories, which is, we'll come back to this, you know, actually a version of modified ADF. But anyway, I didn't know that at the time. So I had 2 days, very, very low calorie, but I certainly ate. I wasn't fasting, and I ate throughout the day. I just sort of stretched those, you know, celery sticks and cheese cubes out kind of all day. And I did lose weight. In 2017, I read Delay, Don't Deny, which was, I think, Jin Stevens' first fasting book, and was introduced to the concept of clean fasting. And that's it. Since then, I've been doing daily, you know, sort of OMAD or TUMAD, but fasting every day, no more of this 5-2, and absolutely clean fasting. I'm a strong proponent. If you're not clean fasting, you're not fasting. So that's been since 2017. So that's 10 years I've been doing some version of IF and 7 years clean fasting. And I have to say that I'm not yet at my goal. Where I would like to be ideally is still about 35 pounds lower than I am now, but I'm very comfortable where I am. And I'm going to talk about that sort of a little more. And what I live today is what I essentially call a maintenance lifestyle. I'm holding steady in terms of weight. I don't give as much weight to the scale, but I go by how I feel and how my clothes fit. That's my history in a nutshell.
Yeah, love and life there in Cairo. Really interesting you said that about the number of people that are interested in intermittent fasting now in Egypt compared to that very first time I spoke to you. I recall you saying that there wasn't a lot of people that knew about IF then. So that's interesting that it's growing in Egypt.
So I know, you know, at some point we're going to shift to a discussion of ADF. And I just wanted to say that what I mentioned that I'm not currently a goal, when I decide mentally that I'm ready to kind of keep moving downward, and I'm really not putting any pressure on myself to do that. But ADF is what I will go back to, because as you know, I had some great success with it. But I think, you know, as you and I have talked about, we need to talk about when it's a good tool and when it's really not a very good tool.
Let's just wind the clock back now. I mean, you're a very experienced faster now, as you've just alluded to there. You're a lot of experience. So you're going to be very helpful to folks listening out there, Rachel. So just over the years, just go through some of the things that you've really discovered on this journey with intermittent fasting, what you found out about yourself, what it's done for you as a person, and just some of the things that you sort of come across that you work through and you know a lot about.
So I would say, I think one of the most radical changes in myself mentally with my relationship with food came when I understood the concept of appetite correction. And, you know, as somebody who was really extremely overweight for most of my life, I had gotten to a point where I ate because food was there, or I ate because I wanted food. You know, I would seek the food out and eat. And it was completely disassociated from hunger. And my signals to sort of stop eating because I'm full were completely non-existent. If they were there, they were buried so deep. And so after a while, and I can't quite remember when, with IF, once I started clean fasting, there were a couple of things that really kind of light bulb moments. One was something that our friend Jin Stevens refers to as the satiety sigh, where you're eating in your window and you get to a point where you're like, you know what, I'm done. And you just know physically and mentally, and you're done for the day, or you're done for that part of your window or whatever it is. So that was like really kind of thinking about that and recognizing that was huge. And then I read Bert Herring's book, Appetite Correction, which really sort of talks about that in more detail. How do you recognize and respond to those really kind of basic satiety signals? That's been, I think, for me, the greatest gift of IF. Everything else kind of follows from that. I know when to stop. I don't feel like I'm punishing myself because I can't eat at this time. You know, I recognize on certain days when, you know what, maybe I'm going to open my window earlier because what I'm feeling is not a normal fasting sort of hunger pain, but I really feel the need to eat. Being in touch with your body and your signals around food has allowed me to live this lifestyle in a way that was unimaginable before I started this. So I think that's one of the biggest sort of take homes for me. The other thing is the concept of body recomposition, that we read about this a lot in IF, that, you know, even when the scale isn't changing a lot, your body changes, people are encouraged to take measurements, which I actually don't do. But I know over the past, I would say 6 months, I might have lost 3 to 5 pounds, maybe. I mean, I don't get on the scale that regularly, but my clothes fit so differently. And in fact, one of the pictures I sent to you, I don't know if you'll post it on the podcast page, but one of the pictures that I sent to you was actually I tried on recently a bunch of clothes I had in my closet that either were too small because someone gifted them to me and I hadn't gone down to that size yet, or I bought them and the size was off. But I tried on a bunch of things and they all fit in a very nice way. And I haven't lost weight. So that is another, I think, huge piece that people need to not focus solely on the scale. And then something else that I think is really important is the increase in confidence that comes with not necessarily losing weight, but I think if you look better, maybe you feel better. And so there's that, but also the confidence of knowing that we're in control. We're not controlled by food. We are now in control of what we eat, when we eat, how we eat, when we don't eat. And it's a conscious choice that we're able to make because we understand how fasting works. So those to me are the kind of greatest gifts I would say I've gotten from IF, and they continue to evolve over the years. I mean, the confidence thing is something I'm really started thinking about recently, and that's, sort of 7 years in.
It's really interesting, isn't it? The confidence certainly comes, that's for sure. And so many changes come, especially when you're an experienced intermittent faster. And let's talk about some of those. The NSVs, or the non-scale victories that we talk about, you must have seen a lot of those over the years. Just sort of off the top of your head, just let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure. So one that I know you certainly share also is the great airplane seatbelt sort of victory that we sit in a plane and we don't worry about needing an extender and we don't worry about sucking our breath in order to, get that belt closed, particularly as, I think we both do quite a few long haul flights. And so sitting uncomfortably in a seat for, 10, 12, 15 hours, it's miserable enough even if you're in business class. But if you're in an economy seat and you can't quite fit in the seat and can't quite fit the belt, that's awful. So that's one of my favorite NSVs. Being able to shop wherever I feel like shopping. Unfortunately, I can't afford to shop wherever I feel like shopping, but knowing that I can, I have way more options available to me in terms of what sizing a store carries. And, I don't have to go only to the stores that cater to larger sizes. And then I think another huge one is the lack of guilt around food. I think people who lived a constant traditional dieting lifestyle, we felt guilty all the time because we know we weren't supposed to be eating that thing or having that snack or doing, everything should have been off balance. So, if we ate it, we felt guilty. And with IF, I think we all learn what foods serve our bodies well. But when I choose to eat something that is not, diet friendly in a traditional sense, there's no more guilt around that because it's a really conscious choice in the context of my eating window and, in the context of my approach to food in general.
Just wanted to dial back into that appetite correction a bit for the folks out there listening that may be fairly inexperienced with fasting. That's something I reckon once you actually find appetite correction, it really sets you up for a sustainable lifestyle, Rachel, because
Absolutely.
I really
That's why
like
I put
what you.
it as literally in my number one, sort of thing that IF has given me that has changed my life completely.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for folks to understand what Rachel was talking about there with that sigh. It's almost like deafening signal after a while where you just go, you feel like you're sort of starting to get full, and then you hit that spot where you just go, you know what, I'm done. I'm done here. And for me, like going back to my weight loss phase when I was doing 23 and 1, and whether I'm doing 22 and 2 or 19 and 5 or whatever it may be, or just fasting in general, I just know when it's time to stop. And that takes a bit of a while. Sometimes it takes a few weeks. Sometimes it can take folks a few months. But I think it's really important that once you get to that feeling of being full and satisfied, no matter how long there is to go in your window, you need to stop and close that window. And I think once you get that
Absolutely.
experience of doing that, everything falls into place, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, my husband of 30 something years saw me, I mean, he saw me in my, sort of what used to be my normal mode of, sort of just being completely detached from those signals. And is still now very, when we're eating and I say I'm done, and he knows that means I'm about to, sort of close my eating window and start fasting again. He knows what this lifestyle is for me, but he still taken aback every time I say, you know, I'm really done, every time I recognize that signal, because he was so used to me not being in touch with that and watching me eat when, you know, any other person would have already been full. So it's interesting that he still is so aware of what a change that is. And I think I mentioned it before, but I would, if you don't mind, book recommendations, I would encourage people who haven't yet experienced that to check out Bert Herring's Appetite Correction book. It's not a very heavy book. It's nothing like Dr. Fung's books. It's not full of heavy science, but it helps to kind of set you up to recognize that signal when it hits, that satiety signal, or that side, as we like to call it.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. Great recommendation, actually. Bert Herring's Appetite Correction. I think that's a great book for anybody for their IF journey that's learning about it. But I think, nutrition plays a big part too. I mean, over the years since you've been doing this, has your nutrition changed much, or you've kept that fairly constant in terms of what you've been eating, or has that changed at all?
Has it changed much? Yes and no. I'm still somebody who loves junk food way too much and who indulges in junk food way too much, but I do it consciously. I don't feel controlled by it. I make a choice. Because most days I'm only eating one meal, I certainly am much more conscious about let's make sure that there's greens included in this meal because I'm not coming back to another meal later where I can say, oh, I'll have a salad or vegetables later. So I try and my meals are more balanced than they used to be because I know that, you know, there's a relatively short window in the scheme of things, whether that's 2, 4, 5, 6 hours, that this is it. So get the nutrients in now. But I don't do that to the extent of saying there aren't any foods that I completely ban. You know, but I think I have a much more balanced approach now because of IF.
Yeah, you probably have a bit more understanding of what those foods are and what they do to us as well. And as
Absolutely.
I said before, there's a huge difference between a person that, say, is a sugar addict and a sugar lover, somebody that just enjoys that, or a fast food addict and a person that just loves the odd bit of fast food. Like you go back to the States for a holiday, you might have Five Guys or something, or something like
Right,
that.
oh,
So yeah, we have to
I
make sure that there's a distinction there. But when you think about it and dialing back into it, you talked about body recomposition there, and there's just so many things outside the scale that happen with intermittent fasting. And folks don't really understand. For me, you mentioned about, finding that peace, if you like, with food. And I think that's a really important NSV too, where you are at calm and you're at ease with food. You no longer fear it. You understand it, and you understand what it does for your body. And I think intermittent fasting really teaches us that.
I agree. And I think I want to also, if you don't mind, say something else about this body recomposition and about people's fixation on the scale. The scale is definitely a tool that we use when we're losing weight or maintaining a weight loss. It gives us a reference point. But I think it can be really dangerous when people fixate on the scale and then think that they're not having success. So I mentioned that I've been really experiencing some body recomposition in recent months. And in those same months, I've barely lost any weight. If I can tell you the number of comments I've gotten from colleagues, oh my God, you've lost a lot of weight this year being 2024. And I know that I haven't, you know, maybe, you know, I'm playing in a range. It's toward the lowest end of my range. I'm back to where I was probably pre-COVID, but it's not the lowest I've been, but I'm the smallest I've been. So there was a point on this journey where I weighed less than I do today. But I'm wearing sizes that I are smaller than I wore at that point, and clothes are fitting more comfortably. And so I think we really have to, you know, especially when we're committing for the long haul, we have to be aware of those changes and stop beating yourself up. I mean, how many posts do we read where we said, you know, people say, even at the beginning, you know, I've been doing this for a month or 2 months and nothing's happened. The scale hasn't moved. Nothing's happened and the scale hasn't moved are not synonymous statements. The scale may not have moved, but lots has been happening internally and probably externally. And I think we need to guide people to paying attention to those. Does your skin feel clearer? Is your reflux feeling a little bit better? Are you sleeping more soundly? Are those pants that were really snug feeling just a little bit looser now? All these are kinds of things that we should be consciously looking for and not just focusing on the scale.
Yeah, I agree. especially when you first start. You know, the scale for me is just data. That's all it is. You know, it tells me where I'm at. It doesn't control my life. It doesn't destabilize me mentally. But I know some people have been punished by the scale because they've done things like Weight Watchers and have had weigh-ins and have had brownie points and all these sorts of weird and wonderful things.
I did that for years. That was me.
Yeah, and they're controlled by it, right?
Those weigh-ins, even though they weren't public, you were in a little cubicle. Even if it's just you and the Weight Watchers leader, those were horrendous, horrendous moments. And when you lost and you felt so relieved, just the anticipation that maybe you didn't and you're going to feel, you know, horrible. I'm so happy to be done with that mentality.
Yeah, well, it's a great thing about IF, isn't it? There's no meetings, no check-ins, no points, no nothing. You don't have
to. No, but there are Facebook groups and all the support that you need is out there if you need it without all those.
Yeah, there is. You know, and there's some great support mechanisms there available for people and some great reading material and all the rest of it. I always say to people, knowledge is power, right? And the more you know, the easier it is. But it has got a little bit overcomplicated, I've got to say. Intermittent fasting over the last few years, we've had a few different protocols coming and people put their own twist on those protocols. Then they put these challenges in and all that sort of thing. So if you're a new person coming in now, it looks a little bit more complicated than maybe what it did 6 or 8 years ago, Rachel, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think one of the things that really was so nice when I first learned about clean fasting, you know, as I said, I'd been doing, you know, 5-2 without clean fasting for a few years. When I first learned about clean fasting and realized the only choice I had to make was, do I want to have a 6-hour window or an 8-hour window when I start? That was it. I didn't, when I first started, didn't think about the food content. That came later. And didn't think about anything but during my fasting hours, all I can have. And that was just a given. You know, black coffee, water, green tea. I'm not a green drinker, you know, green tea or black tea. That was it. And once, like, that, it is that simple. Start with clean fasting. Pick a number of hours that feels doable to you and go. And now you're in. Everything from that point forward is tweaking. And that comes with time.
Yeah, and speaking
of tweaking. Right. It doesn't look so simple today to someone who's just starting.
Yeah, now let's talk about your tweaking over the years. I mean, obviously, when we first spoke, we talked a lot about ADF. You're highly successful with ADF, as a lot of folks are. And we're going to deep dive into that in a minute. But has the protocols changed and you're still chopping and changing? You're still
No, I mean, for a long time, it was 24. Before I started doing ADF. 24 was sort of my kind of go-to happy point. I was losing slowly but consistently. It was really doable for me. And then after I did ADF for a while and stopped doing it, I became much more flexible with my windows. So now my general guideline is I go for a minimum of 18 and I use a fasting app and I set it to 18. And I don't think about it. And some days I go for 20, 21, 22, 24. Some days at 16, I'm like, you know, what we call white knuckling it, kind of watching the clock. And some days I open early because I just feel like I'm not comfortable waiting for another 2 hours. Or there's something happening at work and it would be more appropriate for me to eat now than later. So I'm really flexible, but I aim for a general consistency of minimum of 18. So that's what, you know, but I would say regularly is, you know, 19 to 22 is what I do. My window could be anywhere from 2 hours to 6 hours on a typical day. This weekend, we were away at the beach for the weekend, which as the summer progresses, won't be such a new thing. We're planning on going to the beach a lot, but this was our first beach getaway and we were discovering new places. It's a new beach location for us. And I was much more flexible. I actually changed my app to 16 hours to not feel that pressure, to be able to, you know, to say, or if my husband says, you know, let's go check out this place, not even to say, you know, I need another couple of hours. So I can be very flexible, but I maintain a general rule of 18 minimum.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? You know, I think the IF toolbox really builds up over the years, and you've talked about the IF toolbox here, and we'll go into that in a minute. But, you know, you're a person who drinks alcohol. I can't recall.
Yeah, not much. I'm not a big drinker. And I think, you know, I'll have the occasional beer, you know, sort of the occasional, you know, cocktail. But it's not an everyday part of my life. And I when I plan to have drinks, I absolutely will build my window around it.
Yeah. Are you an exerciser now, or you?
No, I mean I walk. But I don't do sort of heavy power walks. I have a few too many joints that suffer from arthritis to sort of do anything with too much impact. So I aim for at least 1.5 miles of a dedicated walk every day, and then another 1.5 miles of just walking in the course of my day from the car to the house, from the parking lot to my office, things like that. And I have to say, the more consistent I am with that, I think that contributes a lot to the body composition. The walking I do is probably not driving weight loss. It keeps me feeling better. But definitely I would the body recomposition I was talking about recently, I was also walking really consistently during
Yeah.
this period. Gave myself a challenge to walk, more
Walking in
regularly.
Cairo must be so interesting.
I mean, to be fair, I work at a private university that has a stunningly beautiful campus with a lot of green. And I live in a private compound that has a lot of green spaces and a sports club with a big track. So I don't get most of my steps in the crowded streets of downtown Cairo. I love going downtown. I love the hustle and bustle of life in the city, but the crowds are insane. The traffic is insane. So I don't get my walking done there. I'm not in the typical Cairo scene when I get my miles in.
Well, I'll definitely be coming to Cairo for a walk with
I
you,
can't
go and
wait.
have a look at the pyramids. I'd find that amazing because, here in Australia, we don't realize what a baby country we are. When I was in Europe last year and I was in France and I was just looking at these places and, how ancient they were. And I was just thinking, wow, and we're just actually little babies in Australia. Our country
Exactly.
was
No,
discovered
same
not
in the
that long
US.
ago. We know fasting's been around since time began. Nobody invented intermittent fasting. Fasting has been around since day dot. We had hunters and gatherers that were running around and, when food became available. And I think one
Nice
of the things I
segue.
wanted to dial back into that you mentioned, I think it's really important about being comfortable in your own skin. I have a lot of people that say to me, oh, Graham, I've lost 70 pounds, but I can't get this last 5 pounds off, or I can't get this last 10 pounds off. And they really beat themselves up about it. And I say, well, look, maybe your body's just saying, well, we're pretty happy here. And maybe that's your perception that you have to get that 5 pounds or 10 pounds off purely because you think you do, but in reality, your body's probably quite comfortable. So I think it's important to understand when you lose a bit of weight and you're doing intermittent fasting that you really, once you start feeling comfortable in your own body, it's okay.
Yeah, so I could not agree more with that. As I mentioned, I'm not at my goal weight. And I don't really focus, as I said, on the scale, but I have a goal size. And the goal size, I'm actually only one size away from now, I realized. And, it's still, it will be amazing to get below that, but that was always my, sort of my target. And I'm okay not being there. As I said, I may at some point say, you know what, I'm ready to get there, or I'm ready to kind of take this to another level. But I'm fine where I am, and I think that's a huge thing. So yes, I have, sort of fat on my thighs, and I have a huge pooch on my stomach, and I still have bat wings, but I'm not focusing on those. I'm focusing on the things that I dress comfortably. I recently started wearing a belt. It started because I had jeans that were a little too big, and I wanted to hold them up. But then I realized, like, oh, I can actually wear a belt as part of the fashion, and I can tuck a shirt in. And I've started doing that more, and people really are commenting on, oh, you look like you've lost a lot of weight. And it's not necessarily weight, but it's part of carrying myself with more confidence. Which is, I think, also, I don't think I mentioned this, but I think one of the best non-scale victories is that confidence that comes, one, because we've put ourselves back in control in a world where we felt really at a loss for control. So I think, we're successful people professionally, we're intelligent people, but to feel out of control is a really bad feeling. And so having regained that control through IF sort of is really great. So I think there's that, confidence. And something that came with that, which is, I think, something that we often don't think about, is going back and honoring that kind of former version of ourselves that we're really quick to beat up on, right? That was the person that ate too much. That was the person that weighed 300 pounds. That was the person that couldn't fit into the seats. That was the person that was embarrassed to walk into the room, embarrassed to get on stage at a conference, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And we post before and after pictures. And I think the implicit assumption is we're kind of denigrating the before and only kind of celebrating the after. And I think it's really important to honor the before, not to say I want to go back there, not to say I want to be that size again or that health again or be that controlled by food again, but to honor all the things that that person was. And I think it was in Donna Doobie's book, she has a book, The Timekeeper's Guide to Fasting, I believe it's called, Donna being, of course, one of your moderators. She addressed that at one point in her book. And when I first read it, it was like, wow, really, like, that's something huge. Like, you know, we can live our lives being angry at that version of ourselves or not. And I think we have enough to be angry at in our lives, you know, in the world around us. Let's not beat up on ourselves for something that at the time we couldn't control. So I think confidence and respect for where we came from on this journey are two really important kind of mental, almost healing aspects that are completely, yeah, they're related to our weight loss, but they're not about the size of the
100%. Big shout out to Donna Dubé too. And yes, Donna did write a book, Timekeeper's Guide to Weight Loss, which folks can get on Amazon. Great personal journey. And Donna is one of our fantastic moderators, and she does a wonderful job for us in the fasting highway. Yeah. There's no question that intermittent fasting, you know, helps the immune system. It does so much great things for our body, Rachel. And I'm the same as you. I mean, when I was an obese guy, I would regularly get sick every flu season four or five times. I'd have constantly runny nose, coughing, blues, feeling unwell, taking days off work, all the rest of it. And then since I started fasting, to be honest with you, in the last 6 years, I've hardly had the flu or a cold at all. And then I did get COVID. It finally caught up with me in France. I mean, you look at skin conditions, for instance, like psoriasis. Well, specialists told me that I was never going to get psoriasis off my body. Well, 6 months after I started fasting, guess what? The psoriasis left my body. Yep. So something's going on with the healing process.
I had a friend who was fasting, and she had, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a cyst in her wrist area. It was huge. It was a huge cyst. And she was scheduled to have surgery, to have it removed. It wasn't doing anything bad. It wasn't even painful, but it was sort of in the way. And there's a technical name to it, which I can't remember. Anyway, she started fasting, and her surgery was, you know, going to be in another year, you know, because of the healthcare system she was dealing with. And after 4 months of fasting, it was gone. And again, that was the only thing she had changed. So I think, yeah, the body responds in ways that we don't anticipate at all.
The weirdest thing for me was when probably about 6 or 8 months after I started fasting, I went for an eye test. And my eye doctor said to me, he said, this is really weird. He said, your eyesight's actually improved from the last time you were here.
I've heard this so many times.
And he said, have you changed your diet or something? And I said, well, yeah. I said, I do intermittent fasting. I was a sugar addict. I'm no longer. And he goes, this is a reason that your eyesight's improved. He said, you're not the first person to tell me that. That's been
I've heard this from other people.
But, you know, again, I don't want to create any false illusions. But, you know, I think arthritis for me was another thing. I'd wake up in the morning. I couldn't open my hands. My fingers were like bound together almost in the winter. You know, it was really painful. Probably 6 or 8 months after I started fasting, that stopped. Felt like my skin was getting much clearer, as I was saying, the psoriasis was leaving me, aches and pains, waking up in the morning, all those little things were starting to add up. So it wasn't just a scale going down. I mean, obviously a lot of that was attributable to weight loss as well and a change of nutrition.
But
I really feel the change in nutrition is probably the most important thing of all. But one of the things I really wanted to get you on today about is alternate day fasting, or ADF, it's referred to, or some people refer to it as MADF. So we have a few folks out there that have been getting a bit confused lately with ADF and the message about why they should be doing it. And I just want to make a disclaimer here and now that I personally don't do ADF. I probably never will. Not because I think it's bad or it's not beneficial. It's just not something I want to do, and it's not something I'm wired to do, because I'm a guy that wants to eat every day. I want to have that social aspect with my wife, and the idea of eating every other day doesn't appeal to me. But I would really love you to explain just what ADF is and then
Sure.
some of the benefits of it, and then just go into maybe the right reasons to do it and what are the wrong reasons to do it and who should do it.
Okay, so we'll start with, as you said, ADF stands for alternate day fasting. And MADF is modified alternate day fasting, and there are a number of ways to modify. So alternate day fasting, technically, you think of fasting every other day and eating every other day, literally alternating your eating windows as a day and your fasting times as a day. That's the sort of broadest definition. Typical or traditional actual alternate day fasting would be anywhere from 36 to 42 hours, typically. And then you open your window the next day. So say today, what's today is Monday. So if I were now into my alternate day fast, which I'm not, but if I were into an alternate day fast, and tomorrow, say at 11 o'clock, I'd hit 40 hours. Tomorrow from 11 a.m. onward would be my eating day. One of the things that many experienced fasters and people who really looked into this agree on is that on an eating day, or what we call the up day, we sometimes refer to them as up days on the eating days, down days for the fasting days. On the up day, have a minimum of two meals in a minimum of 6 to 8 hours. So no, if you're typically doing one meal a day in 2 hours, if you're doing alternate day fasting, get rid of that. You need to give your body a chance to refeed so that it becomes doable and sustainable, and you're not over fasting. If you eat for 2 hours and then go back into the next fast for another 42 hours, you're overdoing it. It's not something that many people believe is sort of good for you. So let's think of alternate day fasting as let's say 48, and then you can adjust the hours above and below, but that's in a 48-hour period. You fast for 40 hours and have an 8-hour eating window. One of the biggest challenges for people who decide to give this a try, and we'll talk a little bit further down about who should or shouldn't try it, but is to binge their way through that 8 hours. You've just come off of a 40-something hour fast. It's very easy to say, oh, I want this, now I want this, now I want this, and to nibble your way through that whole 8 hours. And that's really not okay. Start with either a light snack or a small meal. Take a break and then still have your main meal later. Then have another snack if you need to, but don't spread it out across the whole 8 hours. Make some very conscious choices. So there's a modified ADF, which is in some ways similar to the version of Michael Mosley's 5-2 that I did when I first started all those years ago. Modified ADF means on your down day, have something to eat, try to keep it under 500 calories just to get over that I can't make it. And do that in one sitting. So with Michael Mosley's 5-2, I spread my 500 calories. I don't know how I did it, but I could spread those over 7 or 8 hours. Literally, I don't know how. It wasn't very much food. But now, if I'm doing a modified ADF, I might sit down to a salad with a boiled egg and a little small thing of yogurt. And I'll have that in one meal, and that's enough to keep me going. So technically, I'm not fasting for 40 hours. I'm fasting for, say, 27 hours, have a 1 hour window, and then continue. But that 1 hour window is part of a longer down day fast. People get fixated on the number of hours. I think that's a mistake. Think of it as a down day with one light meal if you feel you need to, as a way to get started with it or as a way to get over that what feels like an unbearable sort of moment. There are two things before getting into sort of who should or shouldn't do it. Two, I thought about doing alternate day fasting after I had been doing clean fasting for about a year, year and a half. I was learning about alternate day fasting. There were a couple of moderators in at the time, these were one of Jin's Facebook groups, who were thinking about it. And I kind of turned to them for advice. And one of them, Michelle Luther, if you're listening, this is actually you. One of them gave me two pieces of advice that were the greatest things. One is that you'll have a wave of hunger and it will pass. Just like when we're new to fasting, we often had waves of hunger, maybe at the time of day that we usually ate, even if we were just doing, sort of a regular 16:8. Waves of hunger come and go, and we learn to distinguish between a wave of hunger that if you distract yourself, it will pass, and a wave of hunger that's telling you this is serious and you really better eat something. So waves of regular waves of hunger come with ADF. The second thing is that you will probably have an intense wave of hunger, one at your normal eating window. So if you've been doing 18-6 and now you're trying ADF, at 18 hours, you're going to feel the need to eat. It will probably pass. And then the other is around the 24-hour mark for people who are new. So those were things that really helped me succeed because I could be on the lookout for those without feeling like, oh my God, this is impossible. That being said, I think you and I have talked about the fact that a lot of people do ADF for the wrong reasons, and I think that's really important. So I'll start with who do I think ADF is helpful for? One, you should be an experienced faster. Personally, I would say give it a year before you even think about ADF. Some people are more comfortable trying it at 6 months. I would say give it a year. If you're doing this for life, IF, what's another few months in the long story? We shouldn't be in a rush to get to our where we're going because we're doing this forever. And two, why are you doing it? You're doing it just because everyone else is doing it. So, oh, more fasting is better, must be. So let me try that. Are you doing it because I've been eating too much lately and I sort of feel like I need to radically cut back on my eating, so I'm going to do a longer window? This is a form of kind of fasting to punish yourself for what you ate. I think that's a really bad reason to do ADF. Also, I have a wedding coming up. I have a huge college reunion coming up. So I want to fit into that dress. Don't fast now to sort of don't use that as your why. That's a very short-term why. So I think who ADF is good for are people who've been giving, who've been fasting regularly, and maybe hit a plateau. You've been doing this, you've tried to tweak, you've been doing 16-8, you went to 24, you went to 22-2. You feel like you've tried a lot of things and nothing is getting the scale moving again. Again, that shouldn't be the only indicator of success, but people want to see it. So at that point, if you've stalled, if you were having sort of losses and you stalled and you've tried tweaking and it's not going anywhere, that might be a good time to think about ADF or modified ADF. If you know from other indicators that you have severe insulin resistance and or type 2 diabetes, ADF has shown itself, again, no studies that I know of, they might be out there, but has shown itself, and in my case it was true, to have a really tremendously positive impact on longer term blood sugars, on A1C, and then all of lowering all those things helps our bodies to overcome insulin resistance. Those are some of the times that it's really great. So let me stop there, see if you have another question before I.
Yeah, look, I think it's a great explanation, and I'd just like to add to that with ADF. I think, you hit the nail on the head about people that think longer fasting is sometimes better fasting, and that's not always correct. We know that a lot of people have had success doing all sorts of protocols, right, with intermittent fasting, whether it be OMAD, TMAD, ADF, MADF, whatever it may be, because at the end of the day, you've got to find your own jam and what works for you, right? We know that, but there's got to be reasons and whys about why you're doing it. ADF is obviously very beneficial in so many ways, as you've mentioned. I really love the fact that you talked about having some experience with fasting first, because if you're fasting, for instance, and you find that you're not losing weight, but you're not able to a clean fast, you're doing things like having bone broth, you're doing things like having butter in your coffee, you're doing things like cutting corners, having mints, all those sorts of things, that isn't a clean fast. Well, we know that we've got to get that clean fast nailed down. So there's no point in you moving on to something that's as,
Exactly.
very hard to do at times, longer fast like ADF, and you've still got problems with the clean fasting. Or if you're in the
100%.
eating window and you have problems with food problems, like you have issues like food addiction, sugar addiction.
I actually think that people, particularly if they have, eating disorders and they haven't dealt with those yet, or food addictions, ADF would be the worst. Because first of all, you're giving yourself, in some cases, maybe a permission to binge because, oh, it's my up day and I've been fasting for 40 hours, or permission to eat anything because it's just, I think really people who have any food issues they still have to overcome should not even think about ADS. Getting a handle on those things that control us around food ADF is not going to help. It's probably only going to make them worse, honestly.
Well, I'd say so, because you just have all that time to think about it and you've still got that sort of problem. And then once you start, if you've got no off button, it's very hard to control that. And I know that if I did it, I'd probably want to do the one day down, one day up, one day down, one day up, because 500 calories for me, I feel, would just sort of trigger me off and I'd want to eat more, if you know what I mean. Like, I'd feel like I needed more. So I'd want to continue eating, and that would be a problem for me. And then I'd start white knuckling till the end of that, you know, sort of period.
So I'll tell you something. I did. So when I first started ADF, I said, let me do 3 down days a week. So before up days, and I would sort of alter my schedule, you know, sort of. And that's another version of modified where you're not truly doing every other day. Some people want to do a down day once a week or twice a week or 3 times and not a rotating. Essentially 7 out of every 14 days, you know. So I was, when I first started trying ADF, I said, let me give it one day and I'll hopefully be okay to do 2 or 3 this week. Because I had gotten so much good advice from Fasters who I trusted, I was really well prepared. That first up day was probably ate more than I needed to, but it wasn't a full-on binge. And I was so ready to fast again that I immediately said, you know what, I'm doing another down day. And I immediately w went to a true alternate day. But people who are thinking about it for the right reasons, again, some of the reasons we've talked about, and you're not ready to commit, try it one day. Say maybe 2 days a week this week. I'm going to go for a 38 to 36 to 42 hour. You don't have to do all or nothing, like with everything I have. You don't have to do all or nothing. You can do 2 down days a week. That's a modified version of ADF. It works for a lot of people. You know, I see people who say they do 1 48-hour fast a month, and it just keeps them kind of on their toes, keeps their body guessing a little. What for whatever reasons, sort of they choose to do it. But I was not surprised when you said that, Graham, that so many of the people who seek your counseling are kind of rebounding off of a not great ADF experience. You know, again, it's a tool in our toolbox. It's not something that we all should be aiming to do. It's not, you know, as you mentioned, Graham, you're one of the most tremendous success stories coming out of the IF world. Never done it and have no intention of doing it. And why would you? It's not what you need. And it's you know, it's I couldn't agree more that it's a great tool, but it's not something everyone should feel pressured to try or do in a particular way. Do your research, reach out to people who've done it, and ask for their advice first. But somebody recently pointed, I think, I'll admit I haven't listened to your latest episode yet with April, but I remember when she was starting ADF, she posted in the group saying she's thinking about doing it, and she got so much great advice. So she didn't just jump in cold on her own. I can't wait to hear her sort of full explanation. I'm hoping to listen to that podcast today. But that's the way to do it. If you're thinking, if you're listening to this and you're in Graham's group and you're thinking that ADF might be a good tool for you, post about it. Say, I'm thinking about it for these reasons. What do you think? What should be on the lookout for? You know, those of you who've done it and had success, what would you advise? That's one of the greatest. You know, things about this group is that the support is there. And people from all levels of fasting experience are in Graham's group, from people who've been doing it for 10 plus years to people who started yesterday. And
Yeah.
let's learn from.
I think that's important, having those support networks. But what I will say, that obviously ADF, as I was mentioning before, has a lot of great benefits for folks. And, you know, I think if you've got the experience under your belt and you've tried a few things, and you might find that you're hitting a weight loss plateau and all those sorts of things, and you've been doing it for a while, then I fully understand why you'd want to do it. And I think that's a great thing to do, and just see how it goes. And like Rachel said, reach out and ask the people that have been there and gone before you how to go about it, or what to do when something goes wrong. Because it's important to realize that you can always revert back to your comfort zone. And I always say to people, you've got to stay within your comfort zone to a point. Because when you're living a sustainable intermittent fasting lifestyle, for me, it's a daily flow. Like, I know it gets to just after 5 o'clock. It's just hitting 5 o'clock here now in the afternoon. So I know in the next hour or so, I'll eat something for the day, right? That's just how I roll. I don't have any apps. I don't look at the clock. I don't do anything. I just know after 5 o'clock, I eat. I eat till I'm full and satisfied. I eat nutrient dense foods. I eat what makes me feel my greatest. I eat to appetite correction. satisfied, not stuffed, close my window, start the next day. So for me, it can't be any more simpler than that.
Right.
But as we know, intermittent fasting in itself, you're fasting in a period of time, you're feasting in a period of time. It sounds simple, but the mental part of it can be very challenging. So if you could just address that over the years and how you sort of work through some mindset sort of stuff.
Sure. So actually, I was thinking of something, and this is kind of part of that. So when I first started, I would have, similar to you, I would usually, you know, sort of eat in the late afternoon, early evening. That allowed me to sit down and have dinner with my husband, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt like if I ate early in the day, that would ruin it, because then I'd be done for the day and I have nothing to look forward to, as if food was somehow the reward. Lately, I've changed to a much earlier window, and my window usually starts anywhere from 11 a.m. to sort of 2 p.m. while I'm still at work. And I may end it before I leave work, or I may go home and still have sort of one final thing. But mentally, in my head, when I first started, there was sort of a good time for a window and a stupid time for a window. And I thought anyone who ate too early, who didn't have the evening food to look forward to, was depriving themselves. And that's, in retrospect, a ridiculous approach. I think one of the things when we talk about the toolbox is, let's say you want to do, you're doing 24. You could do 24 with your window from 4 to 8 p.m., with your window from 8 p.m. to midnight, with your window from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. I mean, you can do 24 in so many different ways because the pattern of the day differs. I actually realized, remember when I said that I haven't really changed anything, but I've somehow been losing weight again. I've been consistent with an 18-hour window. The one thing I did change was when I have my window, and I think that actually has made a teeny bit of a difference. So back to your bigger question of kind of mind shift. So I think a huge piece of that, we talked already about confidence, and that's, you know, sort of a result of intermittent fasting, one of the non-scale victories. But I think mentally, you know, sort of feeling okay about whatever food choices you make, that's a huge mental shift. I think I mentioned this earlier. We used to live with guilt around food. To me, that's gone, and that's sort of huge. I think the mind, I think mentally, stop comparing yourself. I mean, we've all heard the expression, comparison is the thief of joy. You know, sort of the other person near you, you know, she's been doing 16:8 with an 8-hour window, and she's lost all this weight, and here I am doing 22 and I haven't lost any, and what's she doing better than me? Forget it. Our bodies are different. You cannot compare to yourself. You can't compare yourself to anyone else, whether they have weight loss surgery, or they're doing intermittent fasting, or they're doing, you know, a commercial diet plan. Stop comparing yourself to anyone else. We're all very individual in this way. I think what's great about the Facebook group is that, one, people will reinforce that, because, you know, what I hate is, I don't know why I hate it. It really bothers me. But when someone posts a, you know, the face-to-face Friday pick, and they've, you know, they're down 50 pounds in the last 6 months and they're having tremendous success, and the first thing people ask, well, what's your fasting window and what's your protocol? It doesn't matter, because it worked for them. It doesn't mean it's going to work for you. Stop chasing other people's success. I think that's another huge kind of mindset.
You are looking at somebody that's on the internet. You don't know that person personally. You don't know what that person is doing in the background. That person could be exercising. That person could be eating really good nutrition. That person might be a person that doesn't drink alcohol. You could be doing the reverse. You could be drinking alcohol. You could have poor nutrition. You could have very different habits to what they have. So for a start, comparing you to them is simply futile.
Right. Because you're comparing yourself to what? Something you don't know.
Exactly. Well, yeah, you're comparing yourself to something you don't know, and you're asking them, well, what's your protocol? Okay, well, I'm going to do that because it's going to work for me. But what you've got to find is a protocol that not only works for you, but it works for life. And it's got to fit into your life and your circle. And that's one of the most important things that you can do. And let's talk about the intermittent fasting toolbox. We're going to wind up the podcast soon, but I wanted to tap into your knowledge about this. Obviously, over the years, you've gained so much knowledge and you built this toolbox up. And so you obviously have the confidence now to go forward in life and never be worried about reverting back to old ways or gaining all the weight back or anything like that, because you understand and have a full comprehension of that IF toolbox.
Sure. So I would say, you know, I started gaining weight during COVID when we were working from home, because I tend to eat more when I'm at home because I control what's there and it happens to be things I like. And so that was one of the times I really realized the importance of the toolbox, that, sort of like I have to make a conscious choice about what my timing will be, when in the day I'll eat, what I'll eat. And all of those are things that we control and we tweak, right? As you said, it's a simple thing. You fast for a certain number of hours, you feast for a certain number of hours, and you clean fast. Those are the three non-negotiables. Everything else we control. All those things we control is what I describe as the toolbox. So the toolbox could be changing when in the day you eat, could be changing what your pattern of fasting is, how many hours of each. It could be dipping into ADF, as we talked about. It could be saying, I'm going to only eat the carnivore and I'm not going to eat any plants or carbs. I mean, it could be sort of what you build your daily meals around. It could be going keto. All of those are things in the toolbox that once you've passed the three non-negotiables of IF, those are all the choices we have to make. And so knowing that anytime we're stuck, think about all of those different things that we can control and change while still clean fasting every day. That's what I consider the toolbox. And I think, we just have to remember that it's there, that just because you're not feeling that you're successful with the one way you're doing it today, don't give up. There's a million other ways to do it while still clean fasting. That's, I think, sort of the biggest. So I think the toolbox is really also a mentality. It's not actually a set of tools. I don't care if you use an app or not, maybe that's a tool. But other than that, every other aspect of your day and your fast, you control and you can alter. And so, it's infinitely changeable as long as you're doing those three things: clean fasting, fasting for a fixed duration, and eating ideally with some nutritional awareness for a fixed duration.
Yeah, fantastic. And Rachel, I can't tell you how motivational you've been, not only to
Oh,
myself, but folks out there listening to this
thank
podcast.
you.
I could talk to you all day, but unfortunately, we're running out of time. But before we go, we might just ask you, if you don't mind, just sharing some of your experience. And in a nutshell, if you're sitting around there in Cairo and some folks are asking you about intermittent fasting, what in general do you tell them to get started, and some words of wisdom for those out listening?
So first and foremost, the importance of clean fasting. I actually have a colleague who'd been doing a version of intermittent fasting for maybe a year before I met him. He recently joined the university. I explained to him about clean fasting, and within a month he was like, it's so different. This is so, it's much easier. It doesn't feel like a punishment. He was struggling through his fast because it wasn't clean fasting, whether he was having diet soda or, any non-calorie things that aren't part of a clean fast. So if I'm chatting with people, that's the first thing I'll say. The second thing I'll say is get rid of your expectations and just give it a try. If you're thinking about doing IF, just try it. People, I have so many people who tell me I can't do it. I could never not eat for that long. Believe me, I was the first person to, who would have like been shocked at the idea that I can go this long without eating or that I can stop when I'm full. These are shocking changes in my life. So try it. That's another thing. Read up on it. I have a couple of spare copies of books that I like to lend out to people. I think, reading is a great, obviously, way to learn. But, sort of dive a little deeper than you might have. But if you're not ready to do any of those things, just work on the clean fast. Work on, so here's one really quick tip that I've given to so many people. I can, we've heard it, Graham, so many times. I can't get rid of the cream in my coffee. I can't have coffee without cream. Yes, you can, but you don't have to do it cold turkey. You could, but you don't have to. So if you're thinking about fasting, this week, cut your cream in half from what it was last week and do that again next week. And over the course of a few weeks, you're going to practically eliminate your cream till you get to the point where, oh yeah, black coffee, it's okay. Then you're ready to start clean fasting. So don't, it's really easy to make excuses. And if you're not fully committed to the idea, fine. We're not sure, we're not building a cult here. It's fine to choose another path, but we know how much success we've had with this. And we just want to, if we found like sound like we're evangelizing, it's because we know it works. And we're, I think, both people who probably in some sense had given up on ourselves nutritionally and health-wise before we discovered this. And so so that's how I encourage people. Just give it a try. Don't write it off as impossible before you start. and understand the really basic simple principles.
Yeah, if you can dream it, you can make it happen, as I say.
Yeah,
But
well, that's true.
anyway, Rachel, again, thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. I'd love to have you back in 6 to 12 months' time. Okay, take care and we'll talk
All
soon.
right, take care. Talk soon. Bye.
Okay, bye. Oh, thank you so much, Rachel. Absolutely wonderful to have you back on the podcast, and thank you for sharing your experience and insights that you've gained from living an intermittent fasting lifestyle for a number of years now. I look forward to catching up with you in 6 to 12 months, and my very best to you, your husband, and everybody in your circle there in Cairo and Egypt. Okay, folks, as heard earlier in the podcast, this episode is brought to you by our Patreon members community. Without that support, we simply couldn't be bringing you these stories each and every week via the podcast or have the time to run the Facebook group. So thank you to all those who have been joining. It's a double-edged sword. It's a win-win for everybody. You get to support us. We get to support you. There's two Zoom accountability meetings each month where members come in. They're hosted by myself. They go for just over an hour. And we really delve into any issues with fasting and help each other and cheer each other on. It's been absolutely fantastic to see the progress that members have made. But that's not all. There's a lot of bonus content, extra discussion topics, motivational audio series each and every week that are put out in the Patreon community for you to listen to that you won't hear in the mainstream. Now you can do that by going to the link in the show notes there at www.patreon.com/The Fasting Highway. Now, if you are interested in my own story with intermittent fasting, you'll get that in my book, The Fasting Highway. Now, that's available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. You can get an audio version via Kobo, Spotify, audiobooks.com, Apple Books on your phone, and many other audiobook platforms. It's not on Audible, but you will be able to find it in many, many places in an audio version. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.